Morning, everyone. Welcome to today's daf. Now, today's daf is daf Chav Zayin. We still need to do Chavov, and we're back on Chafei Mud Beis, so obviously we have much ground to cover up. Between the today and tomorrow, and Friday, so I'd like to have us back to speed. So every day we'll do a little bit more than a daf, and between those 3 days, the game plan is that we're going to get back to where we should be. We are discussing Yisuri Hana, these Gemaras that are coming up over the course of these past couple days. Discuss some very basics regarding Yisuri Hana, those things which are prohibited by Hana. The whole parak really started with a simple question of how do I know that Chametz is also bePesach beHana? The Gemara spent 3 days answering that question, but the question being answered, in other words, those Gemaras are just simply background, like how do I get to that point? How do I know that Chametz is also beHana? Good. So the Gemara spent the first 3 days of the parak arriving us to the point that Chametz is also beHana, and now that we know that it's also beHana, so what does that mean exactly? Meaning, what exactly does the Yisuri Hana entail? So that was going to be, that is our discussion that we are having over the past couple of days, and we're going to continue having basically until the Mishnah on Chav Ches, on the bottom of Chav Ches. So really, some basic Gemaras coming up. This is a difficult sugya. I'm just preparing everybody. It's not easy, but it's very enjoyable. A lot of big concepts that we're going to be discussing over these next couple of days. Let's get underway. On Chav He, the discussion turned to using Yisuri Hana to save your life. That was the Gemara's discussion that started on Chafei Amud Aleph. The Gemara basically started off with a statement made. If you could take a look back on Chafei Amud Aleph, and you want to take a look at where the discussion really begins, so it begins with Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. It's on Chafei Amud Aleph. It's two-thirds down on the page. I'm not starting from here right now. I'm just giving us background to get us back into the Gemara. So Rabbi Yaakov quotes the name of Rabbi Yochanan, B'chol Misrapim Chutz Me'atzei Asherah. Like whatever you want to use to heal yourself, meaning you're sick and you need medicine, and the doctor's prescribing here this is good and that's good and burn this and down some of this, so and you can get benefit from any Yisuri Hana except for Asherah, except for Avodah Zarah, which only begged the Gemara to ask the obvious question, well, what's the difference? Meaning, first of all, are we talking about someone who's life threatened or not life threatened? Someone's in critical care or not in critical care? And if he is in critical care, so can we bypass any Yisur in the Torah? To which the Gemara's answer was, no, we're talking about somebody who's in critical care, who's really in a life-threatening situation, and you can't save yourself without the Asherah. And the reason why not is because it's one of the big three. Asherah is Avodah Zarah, and we know that you can't save your life with using any form of Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says that's the explanation. And then the Gemara digressed for a little bit, to discuss what are the big three and how do I know that I'm not going to give up my life for the big three. So very, very basic Gemara and Gemara and Pesachim Daf Chaf Hei, which is now, not yesterday's daf, but already 2 days ago. And good. So that's where we basically got up to. We discussed this issue of getting of saving your life using anything, any derivative of the big three of Avodah Zarah, Shfichas Dam, and Gilui Arayos. And the obvious conclusion is you can't do that. Okay, just one interesting note before we start with we go back to the Gemara. We said that you can't even use Atzei Asherah. You can't use Atzei Asherah, because why? So the simple answer is because it's Avodah Zarah. But that's a simple answer though. That's not really a full answer. Meaning, what does that mean? You're using Avodah Zarah. You're not worshiping Avodah Zarah. Meaning, that's not you're not being ovid of Avodah Zarah. The iser of Avodah Zarah is that you're not allowed to actually worship any type of idol. I mean, that's the iser of Avodah Zarah. And to be more formal, to be more legal, it means that you can't do hishtachavaya, you can't bow, or you can't do any one of the four avodas that's done with a carbon in the base of Mikdash. Meaning, to be ovid of Avodah Zarah, there is a formality, there's a legality in terms of how to do it. So if I take something which was dedicated to Avodah Zarah and I get benefit from it, I understand that's wrong, but to call that Avodah Zarah, I'm not being Oved Avodah Zarah. So you're right. But if you look back at Rashi, the last Rashi in Chaf Hamad Aleph attempted to answer that question, I believe, because what does he say? It's the last words of Rashi on the Amud, V'hamisrabi ba'atzei asherah nira kemodaba. So Rashi writes that, well, if you're using it as medicine, it looks as if you are admitting and agreeing to the Avodah Zarah. Okay? It's a hard Rashi to understand. It's difficult, meaning it's near a kemo deba, it looks like you're worshipping. What does that Rashi mean? Meaning it's not really a Avodah Zarah, but it looks like it, so therefore it's like Mar Zion. But to have a Mar Zion discussion over here, I mean, we're talking about life and death. Right? Usually Mar Zion is not going to be something which is going to hold life and death in the balance. So it's a difficult Rashi, and it certainly requires an explanation. The more, I don't know, but the more classical explanation, but the one that certainly I knew even before going into the daf, was the Avizrayu explanation. Avizrayu simply means the subcategories, right? Rabbeinu Yonah writes this as clearly as could be. He writes it in the Shari Tshuva. He also writes it in his commentary to Pirkei Avos. Basically, there's what's called the main categories of Avos and their Tolados. We have that most commonly in Shabbos, the idea of main categories and subcategories. But Rabbeinu Yonah says the same thing is true with the big three, meaning that there are three sermon in the Torah that you cannot violate even at the cost of your life. And these are just main categories, and then there's subcategories as well. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes this, he quotes this Gemara as one of his examples of this idea of subcategories, meaning that using medicine of Avodah Zarah, you're right, that's not technically Avodah Zarah. You're not being Ovid Avodah Zarah, but it's going to fall under the subcategory of Avodah Zarah, and therefore one is supposed to give up his life, even for Avodah Zarah. Rabbeinu Yonah, by the way, it's an interesting Rabbeinu Yonah. He says, it explains another Gemara, which at face value is very odd. The Gemara says that rather than embarrass somebody, you're supposed to give up your life. Okay? Which, I understand we don't want to embarrass people. But the Gemara says, even at the expense of your life, even if you have to give up your life, you're not allowed to embarrass somebody. Now, I don't understand. The value of not embarrassing people, that I understand. But to give up your life, not to embarrass somebody, meaning at that expense, so Rabbeinu Yonah says, sure. Because embarrassing somebody is tantamount to murder. And Rabbeinu Yonah says, it's not a drush, it's not like a Rabbi Shmuz, it's like, he says, embarrassing is a subcategory of murder. And just like I cannot murder somebody, even if it means that my life is going to be spared, so too I can embarrass somebody. It's a subcategory of Shvichas Damim. So Rabbeinu Yonah really goes with this idea of main category and subcategory when it comes to the big three. Chav Hamad Beis is where we're at right now. So we just finished up yesterday with the sources. How do I know? How do I know that I have to give up my life for Shvichas Damim, for Avodah Zarah, for Gilu Arayos? And so the Gemara gave explanations for all three. By the explanations for Avodah Zarah and for Gilu Arayos, all based on Pesukim. What about the obligation to give up my life rather than kill somebody? So the Gemara says that's Svara. That's a logical argument. Because how do I know that his life has less value than my life? Maybe his life has more value than my life. I'm really not in a position where I can judge, and therefore I can kill him to save me. I don't know if that was worth it. So the Gemara says this Svara, it's a logical argument. Okay, we are in the Gemara in Chafei Amud Beis. We are starting right in the middle of the Amud Marbar of Ashi. Right, it's a little bit above the midway point on the Gemara. Marbar of Ashi Ashkechel Ravina Deshayef Lelevarte Bikoharki DeArla. So finds the Ravina. What he's doing is he was spraying on his daughter Guharki DeArla. Okay, basically Rashi explains olives, small olives, and he was doing so as a refuah. And what his assumption was is, yeah, I know it's Arla. I know the fruit in question is Arla. Came off the tree the first 3 years. Fruit is also Aser Be'achila and Aser Be'hana'a. And he spread on his daughter. So So he says to Ravina, no, don't do that. Meaning, yes, you're allowed to benefit from Isuri Hana'a, but that's only if your life is in the balance. Shalom B'Shasa Sakana Mi'amor. But if it's not critical condition, so you can use it as medicine. So the first version of the answer is, no, this is critical. Meaning my daughter's not just it's not just having a headache. In other words, it's Samirta. What exactly that is, I don't know. It sounds like a fever, an infection, however you want to translate it into modern medicine. But anyway, but the point is that it's critical care, it's critical condition, and therefore you're allowed to use it. Again, because it's not one of the big three, it's Arla. It's only the Isser of Arla, and so therefore you could save your life with the Isser Hana of Arla. That's answer number one. Igad Amre, Amle, Midider Hana, Kavdina. Or the other answer, which again, we're going to see just thrown around again and again over the course of this discussion, this is not Derech Hana. Meaning as we discussed the other day, no, it feels like a long time, but as we discussed the other day, when the Torah asks us from getting benefit from something, that's only Bederech Hana. So it has to be that the Isser, the Torah, is only when I benefit it in the usual manner. If I'm benefiting in an unusual way, that's what's called ein hanasa bekach, ein derech hanasa bekach, and therefore would be permissible. And so the other argument that you can make over here is that her care is not critical care, her condition is not critical. It's just an ailment, but this is not derech hanasa bekach. Itmar hana ba'al la'adam ba'karcho. Okay, and now we begin a very difficult sugya, and I say it's difficult because there are four variables, which we're going to go through all four variables, and also just the definition of the terms themselves aren't precise. So because of that, because it's four variables, and because the definition of terms is not precise, so I'm going to label the Gemara as a difficult Gemara. Okay, you could disagree, but you'll see. It's going to be a little bit tricky. Itmar hana ba'lo la'adam ba'karcho. Let's say you have another comes against your will. Now, this term ba'karcho, against your will, I mean, even at the beginning of the discussion, meaning if it's totally against your will, that's what's called anus. Okay? And anus rachmana patre. Meaning, if it's totally against your will, so there's really nothing to talk about. Right? We have a concept coming up again and again throughout Shas, which is that if something is beyond my control, so I just have no liability for it whatsoever. Right? The classic example of the anusa is, of course, the woman who's raped. But it doesn't even have to be that dramatic. In other words, any time that you're involved in an action, but you simply had no control in the matter, so there's no liability. So when it says Bal Karcho over here, yes, I'm going to translate the Gemara literally, it's against your will, but you understand, though, it's not exactly, let's not take it super literally. So Hana Bal Adam Bal Karcho Abaya Amar Mutas Rav Amar Asura. So the Gemara, before giving any real definition of what we're talking about, so the Gemara sets this up with a Metzemachok Chin Abai and Rava, where Abai says it's Mutter and Rava says it's Asar. Okay. So, but again, not enough information yet, so the Gemara is going to provide for us more information. Efsher v'kamechavein, lo efsher v'kamechavein, kuli ama pligi de Asar. Now, there are going to be, here's basically our variables are going to be as follows. Again, there are four variables. Two of the variables are efsher versus lo efsher. Now, I'll translate it literally, but again, let's not take it too literally. Efsher means it's possible. What does that mean, possible? Possible that I don't have to enjoy this benefit. Meaning, I could do it in a way where I don't have to get benefit from the Isser Hana. Lo efsher means impossible. Impossible means, I'm going to translate it, not super literally, but it'd be really difficult for me to perform whatever goal I want to perform without getting benefit from this item. So this is what's called efshar and lo efshar. And then the other two variables are mechavin and eino mechavin. Did I have intent to benefit from this item, or did I not have intent to benefit from this item? So again, right now we're speaking really conceptual. There are no examples right now, as of yet. So once we see the examples, I think we'll have a better time understanding what exactly we're talking about. So again, efsher v'kamechavin, lo efsher v'kamechavin, kulam lo pligi da'asar. So if it's efsher, even if it's lo efsher, but my intention is to benefit from something which the Torah prohibits, so then it's going to be prohibited. Meaning, intent, according to our first version, oh, by the way, another reason why this discussion is going to be complicated is because there's going to be two versions of how this discussion goes. So it's four variables and two versions of the discussion. Okay, so I may be justified in calling this a complicated sugya. So anyway, we're in the first version right now, in the Lishna Kama of the Gemara, and the Gemara says that if you have Kavana, we're all going to agree that's prohibited, even if it's Efsher, even if it's Lo Efsher. Lo Efsher, v'lo mechavein. Now if it's Lo Efsher, meaning, whatever I'm doing right now, there's no other way for me to do it, and I'm not intending to get benefit, kule ama lo pligi deshari, then we can all agree that would be mutter. Okay. Now it's funny, by the way, you could really throw another variable into this discussion, not that I want to make it any more complicated than it already is, But we can all guess. We all know what's another variable that we could throw into the discussion, especially when we're talking about kavana and eno kavana, and that would be psik reshe, meaning, well, is this going to be inevitable, or is it not going to be inevitable? Meaning, even if it's an eno miskaven, even if it's something which I don't attend, we say throughout Shas time and again that Rabbi Shimon agrees to Rabbi Yehuda by a devashen miskaven. But if it's a psik reshe, it would be aser. So the Gemara could throw that into the discussion. Again, you'll see with the examples a little bit better that it's not just misasik. It's more. It's in other words, the examples will be much better in terms of fleshing out what we're talking about. Why does the Gemara not introduce psik reshe? I don't know. But I do know that the Rishonim already talk about where psik reshe falls into the discussion. You can see, we're not going to go through it now. You could see the second to last Tosfos on the Amud, or let's just say it's simpler, the second Tosfos on the Amud, where Tosfos over there has a discussion of how psik reshe falls into this discussion. But it's interesting, the Gemara does not bring it up. Okay. Keep pleading, again, back to the Gemara. Here's what I know. I have a machlok between Abai and Rava. Abai is Mekel, he says it's Mutter, and Rava says it's Aser. What's Mutter and what's Aser? So the Gemara now limits the whole debate. Keep pleading to Efshar v'lo mechaven. So the debate's going to be in a scenario where it's Efshar, meaning I don't have to right now be benefiting from the Sisuri Ana, but it's available. But lo miskaven, I have no intention. Meaning my intent right now is not really to get benefit. It's coming as a byproduct of whatever act I'm doing. But it's not my real intent. So now in this scenario, Abaye and Rava are arguing. And Abaye is saying it's fine, and Rava says it is not fine. Now, more context to this whole discussion. Meaning we know that whenever we have a discussion of Kavana or no Kavana, we turn to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, who have a basic machlokus time and again throughout Shas about Davashena Miskaven. If I'm not intending to benefit, is that prohibited? Is that permitted? Now Rabbi Yehuda is going to be Machmir and Rabbi Shimon is going to be Mekel. Note, which we've noted time and again throughout Shas, this machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is not limited to Shabbos. Right, the general thinking is that this is a Shabbos machlokus, not on Davashen Miskaven. Davashen Miskaven is a universal machlokus that applies not just to Hilcha Shabbos, but applies to Kol HaTorah Kula. Okay, and you'll see over the course of this discussion that this point is going to bear itself out. That Davashen Miskaven is a universal concept applying to all mitzvahs of the Torah. So Aliba Rav Yehuda Dama Davashen Miskaven Asar Kolam Lo Pligidasar. And even this machlokes between Abai and Rava, we can't be even having a conversation within Shitas Rav Yehuda because Rav Yehuda says Davashen Miskaven is Asar. Ki Pligi Aliba de Rabbi Shimon Dama Davashen Miskaven Mutter. So we're only discussing this issue within the position of Rabbi Shimon. Meaning, even just to get the discussion off the ground, we're gonna assume like Rabbi Shimon. And now, even within Shitas Rabbi Shimon, we're going to debate. So now we know that Rabbi Shimon says Davashena Miskaven is Mutter. So how can we debate within Rabbi Shimon? The Gemara explains. Abai ka Rabbi Shimon. So first of all, Abai's position, very comfortable position. I hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says Davashena Miskaven is Mutter. I hold like him. Now, Rava. Amar ad kan lo kamer Rabbi Shimon. Ala hecha de lo efshar. Aval hecha de efshar lo. He's just going to simply limit Rabbi Shimon. Yes, Rabbi Shimon says Davashena Miskaven is Mutter. Agreed. But that's only in a scenario of low efshar. Low efshar means there's no other way. There's just simply no other way. But if there's another way to do it, so then Rabbi Shimon's not going to say Davashena Miskaven.
Okay.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, I, in this case, I'm not going to give it to you. It's really, I'll give you the following example. Okay, and what all I'm going to do now is just give you Rashi's example. Okay, let's say I got to do the following. I got to get a bench, and I'm going to give a Shabbos example, but again, as you'll see throughout the discussion, this is not limited to Shabbos. I got to get a bench from here, from point A to point B. Okay, so how do I do it? So if the bench is really big, and it's hard for me to pick the bench up, so I can drag it. Now again, I know psik reisha, we all know psik reisha. Let's assume for our purpose of this discussion and for the purpose of this example, we don't know for sure if it's going to create a groove in the ground. It may not. Okay. Even if it does, That's not my intent. Okay? So this is a case of lo efsher v'kamechavein. Okay? In other words, it's really big. For me to pick it up, I can't do it. So it's lo efsher. Now again, if you take lo efsher too literally, meaning, well, lo efsher, well, just don't drag the bench. Okay, so in other words, lo efsher just simply means there's no other way for me to do what I want to do. And that is get the bench from here to there. So therefore, I could drag it on the ground. Rabbi Shimon would say, Davar Sheina Miskaven is mutter. I'm not intending to make a groove in the ground, so therefore it would be permissible. However, Rashi goes on to say, but let's say it's not a bench. Let's say it's a small item. It's a kli, where I could either drag it on the ground or pick it up. So what Rav is going to argue is, there Rabbi Shimon will not say Davar Sheina Miskaven is mutter. Because, efsher, pick it up. Pick it up, walk it across, you don't have to drag it. That's an example of efsher. And so what Rav now is going to argue is, yes, Rabbi Shimon says Davar Sheina Miskaven is mutter, but that's only under the category of low efsher. But if the category is efsher, so then, no. Then he's going to tell you to pick it up. Okay. Lishna kama, that is all according to the first version of our Gemara. Okay? Straightforward. Again, I know there are a lot of variables, but we have a machlos between Abai and Rava. Abai is mekel, Rava is machmir. Abai says it's mutter, Rava says it's aser. What is mutter, what is aser? In a scenario where it is ainu miskaven, that's not my intention, and they're arguing where it is efsher. If it's davar sheina miskaven, lo efsher, we all agree that's fine. It's totally permissible. Because we both go like Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter. Davar sheina miskaven and efsher. So now we have a machlok between Abai and Rava. Where Abai is going to tell you that it's mutter. It's sheina miskaven. Rabbi Shimon will tell you that it's mutter. And Rava is going to say no. Rabbi Shimon's limited to lo efsher. Not a case of efsher. Okay, now if you got all that, that's great. Because that's all lishna kama. That's all according to the first version of the Gemara. Now, now what we're going to do is we're going to do this again, and we're going to do a second version of the Gemara. Apparently, the Gemara had two versions of how this debate went, and now version number two. Igadami efsher v'lo miskaven. If it's efsher, and I am not, and I don't have kavana to do the itzur in the Torah. So, Haina Plugtai to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. So that's the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Now, already you see the drastic departure, the difference between Lishna Kam and Lishna Basra. According to the second Lashon, it's Efsher, meaning I didn't have to drag it on the floor. I could just simply have picked it up and walked it across. There still is a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda obviously is going to be Machmer, and Rabbi Shimon is going to be Mekel. Lo efshar, v'lo kamechavein, kule ama lo pligi deshari. If it is the case of lo efshar, and if it's case of lo miskavein, then it's a no-brainer. There, it's going to be mutter. Ki pligi de lo efshar v'kamechavein. So where's the machlokus? The machlokus is going to be where it's lo efshar, meaning to do what I want to do. There's no other way to do it. I have to violate this or hana, but v'kamechavein. At the same time, however, I'm also intending to violate Isuri Hana. Meaning, part of my act includes intent to violate Isur Hana. V'alib the Rabbi Shimon da'azal basar kavana kule ama lo pligi da'asar. Now, for Rabbi Shimon, look, kavana is everything for Rabbi Shimon. Meaning, davar she'eno miskaven, mutter. Davar ha-miskaven, asar. So in other words, it comes out now that according to Rabbi Shimon, if as long as you're having kavana, so then it's going to be aser. Ki pliga libe de Rabbi Yehuda. Now here's where it's going to get a little strange. The whole machlokes between Abai and Rava is within Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. So first of all, it's strange. Point number one, it's strange because we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. So for Abai and Rava to have a machlokes within Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, already that's a little bit strange. That's point number one. And why else is it strange? Because it's going to come out now that Rabbi Yehuda is going to be more makel than Rabbi Shimon, which in my mind, the way I have it organized in my mind, that never happens. I mean, Rabbi Shimon is always a more makel on these issues of Davar Sheina Miskaven and Melacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. Rabbi Shimon comes out to always be the makel, and now the way the Gemara is setting up, Rabbi Yehuda is the makel. Okay, that's also another reason why this is strange, but Strange as it is, ki pliga libe de Rav Yehuda. Damar loshna miskaven, loshna she'en miskaven. Where Rav Yehuda clearly makes no distinction between when a person has kavana and when a person does not have kavana. Meaning, on the side of chumra, does it matter whether you have kavana or not? No. We're going to be machmir. So the Gemara now is going to try to argue, well, if it's lo efshar, so Rav Yehuda is now also going to not make any distinction between kavana or no kavana. Rav Yehuda is going to be mako. That's a leap, and I know that's a leap, and the Gemara knows that's a leap. Efshar, Aser, Abaye, Kareb Yehuda, the Rav Amalacha, Adkan lo kam Rav Yehuda, Shem is kaven, Kim is kaven, Ela lechomra. And Rav's argument is going to be, come on, meaning when it's a davish, when it's when is Rabbi Yehuda not going to make a distinction between kavana and no kavana? That's only when it comes to chumra. Ela lechomra, ava miskaven kishein miskaven lekula. But for Rabbi Yehuda to go the other direction, in a case of lo efshar, Rabbi Yehuda is going to tell you, oh, don't worry, just like eino miskaven is mutter, so is miskaven. So the Gemara says, hard to imagine. So miskaven kishein miskaven lekula lo. Okay, amar Abaye. Okay, that is all lishna basra. Okay, so far so good. Lishna, we have two lishonos of, we have a machlok between Abaye and Rava, and we have two lishonos of the machlok. So according to the first lishna, according to lishna kama, the whole machlok between Abaye and Rava is in a scenario of davar she'eino miskaven. In other words, first of all, we're arguing within Rabbi Shimon. We're arguing the case of davar she'eino miskaven. Rabbi Shimon says davar she'eino miskaven is mutter. What's the machlok between Abaye and Rava in the case where it is efshar, where I don't have to do the iser? There's another way for me to do what I want to do without having to do the iser. So that would be a case of efshar. So, but in the case of lo efshar, so we all can agree that it's going to be mutter. That's according to lishna kama. What about according to lishna basra, the second lashon? We're not arguing within Rabbi Shimon. We're arguing within Rabbi Yehuda, and we're arguing in the scenario where it is a davra hamiskaven, and it's a davra hamiskaven. And it is lo efshar, where the argument is going to be that Rav Yehuda is going to be mekel. At least that's Abaye's argument, and Rava says no, Rav Yehuda is not going to be mekel in that scenario. Okay, Amar Abaye Manami Nala. So now that we have the parameters of the debate, let's see now if we can plug it in. Meaning, basically, now what we're going to do from this point going forward is we're going to give example after example. And this will really make the whole discussion a lot clearer, because up until now, it's been more conceptual than practical. And we're going to see whether or not we can defend Abaye's position. Okay, so example number one. Amar Abaye mena minala detanya amar olav Rav Yochanan Zakkai, sheyesh yoshev b'tzil shalhecha v'doresh kol hayom kula. Rav Yochanan Zakkai, who saw the destruction of the Chorban, okay, appropriate day to mention it. Okay, the Beis Hamikdash burned until the 10th day of Av. So the which is why Nehuge Avelis continues to Chatzos Hayom today. So Rav Yochanan Zakkai says that he was standing in the shade of the Heichal, and he would be darshaning. So in other words, hot day. So he needed shade. So where did he get the shade from? He used the building of the Beis Hamikdash, which cast a shadow. He sat in the shadow, and he taught in the shadow, in the shade. So what he's doing now, he's benefiting from the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, now, I'm sorry, Kol HaKoyim V'Hacha De Lo Efshar. Now, the Gemara puts us under the category of Lo Efshar. Right away, I told you before, I'm going to say it again, you see Lo Efshar is not to be taken super literally. Lo Efshar, meaning he had no choice. What does that mean, he had no choice? He could have not given shir, or maybe there's another place where he could have given shir. But the Gemara says it would. I mean, again, I'm just assuming lo efshar in this discussion means it's just really inopportune to do it anywhere else. Well, the Gemara is going to get to that in just a moment. I'm just right now trying to wrap our heads around these ideas of efshar versus lo efshar. Ve'ha'acha de lo efshar u'mechavein. Now, obviously, he knows he's in the shade. He knows he's benefiting from the shade. And shari, and the conclusion is it would be mutter. So in other words, there is an element of kavana. Okay, this is, by the way, following the lishna basra. There's an element of kavana, and he knows he's benefiting from it, and it's mutter. So Abaye says good. point for me. Rav Amar Shani Heichad Olatocho Asui. So the Rav's response was very simple. What? That the use of the shade of the Beis Hamikdash, that's not Hana. Now the way the Gemara says it is because that's not why the wall was built. The wall of a Heichal is not built to provide shade. Its primary purpose is for the insides, for the contents. And the fact that you now are sitting and getting benefit, to use Rashi's terminology, that's Ein Zed Derech Hanasa. That's not normal usage of the of benefit. Okay, Amar Rava Menamin Allah. So Rava says, okay, good. Abaye, you had your turn. Now Rava says, let me have a go at it. Lulan hayu psuchim ba'aliz beitz kachay hakadosh shebehem ashal shenasa umnin betevos kedei shelo yezunu aneim beitz kachay hakadosh. Okay. Mishnah in Midos. The Mishnah Midos describes how, you know, temple upkeep. In other words, like Rabbi Weil described yesterday, Beis HaMikdash was around for hundreds of years. First Beis HaMikdash 400 years, second Beis HaMikdash 420 years. So it needed constant upkeep. So the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right, where the Aron is kept, although in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Aron over there. So in other words, the walls needed cleaning. Now we know the halacha, no one can go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The only opportunity would be the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. And he's certainly not doing temple upkeep at that point in time. So in other words, so how do we maintain the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So the Mishnah Midos describes. Basically, there would be an opening from the top. The workers would be lower down. You have that picture of the window washers along the side of the skyscrapers. So basically, keep the same picture in your mind. However, they wouldn't just be sitting on the what's that thing called? Right, the plank, whatever it is, scaffold. That's it. They wouldn't just be sitting on it, but it'd be an entire box, so that the only thing they could see is the wall directly in front of them. But they will not be able to see any other part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So describes the Mishnah Midos how the workers would work. Now, to look back at the language of the Mishnah in Midos, it's very precise language. Shaloya zonu einemi beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. Their eyes won't feast on the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, ha'acha de lo afshar. Again, this categorically is lo afshar. We got to do it. We got to upkeep the Beis HaMikdash. So this is under the category of lo afshar. And kamechavein. And now, had they not been insulated in a box, they certainly would be looking around the room with intent to benefit. Meaning, it's like looking at fine art. But it's even better than that. Inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Ve'asur. And it's going to be prohibited. Which is why they're boxed in. Okay? So what you get from this Mishnah Midos is that it's lo efshar, and there is kavana, and it's asur. So Rava says, point for me. The Tizbara, the Gemara says, okay, but really, we took a leap, which is, v'am Rav Yishom ha-mepazi, v'am Rav Yishom ha-levi, mishom bar-kapar, kol ma'ar v'reach, e'im ba'am mishom me'ila. Elamala, asur be'ez kachek adashim. So the Gemara says, first of all, you got to really, in other words, we're talking about Isuri Hana. Benefiting from something which the Torah says you're not to benefit from. We spoke about this idea before, but now we get to speak about it again. Gradations of Hana. Meaning, even though something's Asa B'Hana, what exactly is Asa B'Hana? So, the classic example would be to take oil, which you're not allowed to eat, and rubbing it on your skin. Although, one can make the argument that that's actually also a form of ingesting. But anyway, but let's just stick with that example. Meaning, that's a tangible benefit from an item. That's usur. Here, we're talking about intangible benefits. Looking at something. Smelling something. And the third is hearing something. So these are certainly pleasant, right? We like to listen to good music. We like to look at something which is aesthetically pleasing. But, in other words, is that a real violation of Hana? I'm benefiting. Now, I understand that we'll pay to go into a museum, but there certainly is a benefit. But is it when the Torah says you're not allowed to benefit, is that constitute the Isra Hana? So the Gemara basically says no. Right? Kolu marverech ein behem mishum me'ila. It's not subject to me'ila. Now, the Gemara frames in the context of me'ila, which means that if it is owned and operated by the Beis HaMikdash, so we can't use any item of the Beis HaMikdash for our own personal use, But if all I'm doing is just looking or smelling or listening, that's not subject to the Isser of Me'ila. Okay. And so if that's all true, so why put them in a box when they're going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Mala, as a chumrah, as a stringency. But in other words, it's not, it's the real consideration over there is not Isurei Hana. Now we're going to do this, we're going to have the same discussion we just had, and slightly different conclusion. No, the conclusion is not going to be different, but the path we're going to go down is a little bit different. Amar Rav Minami Nallah. So again, Rav says, how do I know that I'm right? The Tanya will learn to the Brisa. Amar Rav Shemem Pasi, Amar Rav Yeshua Malevi Mishum Bar Kapar Kol Amar Rav Yechem Mishum Eila. So again, the statement of Rav Yeshua Mempasi, that to look at something, to smell something, or to listen to something, is not subject to the Isra of Me'ila. But now we're going to make a diuk. Me'ila hu deleka Isra Ika. Meaning that there's not a formal violation of Me'ila. Me'ila is a very legal term. Meaning it doesn't just simply mean you misappropriated. It means you stole from the Beit HaMikdash and you have to make a reimbursement. You have to pay back the principal amount of that which you stole, add another 25% on top of that, also bring a karban, meaning you were moel behektesh. So when Shimon Ben Pazi says you're not violating Me'ila, it means, formally speaking, we're not going to put this under the category of Me'ila. But is what you're doing wrong? Yeah, it's prohibited. The Me'ila hu daleka ha isura ika. Now there's going to be an isser.
The assumption is that which is more machmir, isser hana or
Me'ila is an isser hana, but to say something is to say you're mal behektish means not just that you were violated isser hana. It means with repercussions of Karen and Chomesh. Correct, correct. That's exactly the point of the Gemara.
But Reach and Marah also would not be.
Well, okay, we're gonna come back to that. So Hai Suri Ika, my love lo and home bifnim, the low afshur, the kamechavin va'asur. So now the diuk is an excellent diuk. Now who's the diuk applying to? Meaning, isn't the diuk for the people in the box? Where? It's low afshur, meaning they gotta do maintenance, and if they weren't in a box, they'd be have kavana, meaning they'd be looking around the room, gazing and benefiting from it. And ostensibly would be usur. And that, Rava would say, would be a point for me. Because my position is that even the case of lo efshar, if you have kavana, it would be prohibited. So the Gemara says, lo lo osam am de mechutz. The Gemara says, no, we're not talking about them. We're talking about for the people outside. Okay. Gufa. Am Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Am Rav Yeshua Malevi, Mishum Bar Kapar, Kol Mar Rechem, Mem Shem Me'ila. So the Gemara again quotes the statement of Shimon ben Pazi, and the Gemara wants to go into it a little bit more. Reach ein ba mishum me'ila. So the Gemara says, first of all, reach, meaning there are three things which the Gemara says are intangible benefits, and therefore not really subject to me'ila. And the three things are kol mara v'reach. So listening to sound, music being produced, or any pleasant sound. Mara just simply means the appearance of it, and reach and the smell. The Gemara says, really, reach is not a violation of not just the Isurei Hana, but Me'ila. The Gemara says, I don't know where you got that from, but Hatanya. In fact, we learned in a Braisa. HaMefatim HaSikhtaris. One of the, it's a serious issue in the Torah, and one, in other words, a lot of Isurim in the Torah we have to worry about, and some of them we just don't need to worry about. Mefatim HaSikhtaris. You're not allowed to recreate the Ketaris. So the Ketaris is the incense burned in the Beis HaMikdash daily, prepared in the beginning of the year, enough for the entire year. And it's a basically, it is 11 spices that are blended together with a very specific recipe in terms of how they're blended together. And if you and I were in the comforts of our own home were to make and recreate it, that would be an Isser in the Torah. And how grave an Isser are we talking about? Isurei Kares, right? One of the 34, I'm leaving out the two assays. One of the 34 Isurei Kares in the Torah. So it's a serious offense. HaMefatim HaSikhtaris, L'his Lamed Ba'o L'mos or L'tzibur Pater. Now, if you're doing so because you want to pass it on to the next generation, meaning you want to show people how to do it so that the next generation knows how to make it, that's fine. Lahariach ba'chayev. However, if your intent to make it is because I really like how the Ketaris smells, so in the comfort and confines of my own home, I'm going to prepare the Ketaris so that I could smell it. So you just violate the Issur Torah of being mefatem hakatoris, and then you're going to be chayev. V'hameriach ba pater el shema'a. Now, oddly enough, what if I do actually smell it? So that's not a chayev kares. Okay, but it's not odd, meaning the Torah, what the Torah puts under the prohibition is mefatem hakatoris, recreating the katoris. Once you made it already, and once you're already chayev kares, now that you smell it, so that's not going to be an Issur Kares. But if I go to the Beis HaMikdash and I smell the Ketores of the Beis HaMikdash, so then El Hashem Ma'al, you just violated Me'ila. So now the question is obvious. Rav Shimon Ben Pazi made the statement of Kol Umar V'Reach Ein Bo Mishum Me'ila, and meanwhile the Braisa says if I smell Ketores, you just violate Me'ila. Alam Rav Papa, so Rav Papa says this is a difficult question, not no easy way to get out of it. Kol umare ein ba mishum eila lefisha ein ba mamish reach. So basically, what we're going to do is change the statement. The intangible benefits where there's no isser of meila is going to only be kol umare, listening to something or looking at something that doesn't have a tangible benefit. Reach, on the other hand, is considered a tangible benefit. Reach
acher, huh? You paid the 20%.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Everything has a value. It's just a question of figuring it out. Reach acher shetala timrasu ein ba mishum meila hol v'nasa mitzvaso. Now, when it comes to the ketores, so before the mitzvah is done, meaning before the burning of the ketores, you cannot smell the ketores. And if you go into the Beis HaMikdash and you do, you violate the Issur of meila. Now, what about after the Ketores is burnt, and the smell is now wafting through the air? That's fine. And why is it fine? Because nase mitzvah so. Once the mitzvah is performed, so there's no longer an Issur of Me'ilah. When, back in Masechta Me'ilah, if you remember, it's one of those big ideas that comes up again and again. Nase mitzvah so. Once the mitzvah has been performed, there's no longer an Issur of Me'ilah.
The smelling is unavoidable, but in previous Gemara that you smelled all of it in Jericho. I mean, it's like a...
Correct. And now we know why it's unavoidable, but it's okay. And the reason why it's okay is nasa mitzvasa. Lenemer de chol echad nasa mitzvasa im mishmeila v'harich masadash nasa mitzvasa v'yesh b'mishmeila. Now the Gemara is going to point out basically there are two exceptions, two possibly three exceptions to this rule. Okay, so number one is true masadashin. Right, I don't know if you, those listening, Rabbi Weil, carefully. I mean, he spoke 5 hours yesterday, but he actually alluded to yesterday's daf while speaking. He said Truma Sadeshin, you know, today's daf. So he got away with learning without actually learning. So anyway, so Truma Sadeshin. Every morning, the first avodah that's done in the Beis HaMikdash, Kohen goes up to the top of the mizbeach, takes a shovelful of the ashes, comes down from the Beis HaMikdash and deposits it right alongside the southeast corner of the ramp. Okay, that's the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshin. Now what happens in the first Beis HaMikdash, an ace occurred where the ashes basically get absorbed down into the ground. But if they don't get absorbed down into the ground, those ashes are going to be asur behana. You cannot benefit from those ashes. Even though nase mitzvah, so even though the mitzvah has been performed. You're not allowed to get benefit from it even after the mitzvah has been performed. And so the Gemara's question is basically, so if that's true by Trumas Hadeshin, shouldn't that be true by all Isurei Hana'a? So the Gemara says, Mishum Davi Trumas Hadeshin and Big Tekunah Shnei Ksuvim Mambayim Ke'echad V'chol Shnei Ksuvim Mambayim Ke'echad Eim Alamdin. So the Gemara says, because Trumas Hadeshin is not the only example the Torah gives two examples. You know how it works. One example, that sets a precedent. Two examples, exceptions to the rule. Right? That's the concept of Shnei Ksuvim. Shnei Ksuvim Baim Ke'echan. And what's the other example? Trumas Hadeshin Hada Amaran. So one example, Trumas Hadeshin, covered that already. What's the second example? Bigdei Kahuna, Dichsi Veinichim Sham, Malamit Shetu'unam Geniza. After the Kohen uses his Bigdei Kahuna, after the Kohen Gadol, I should say, uses his Bigdei Kahuna, he deposits them there. Right? They require geniza. They cannot be used again. Now, hanichal rabbanan dami malam shetunin geniza al rabbi dosa depalagalei dami aval ruin helakoin hedjot. So the Gemara says that works out beautifully for the Chachamim. But according to Rabbi Dosa, all the Torah prohibits is that the begadim of the Kohen Gadol cannot get reused for another Yom Kippur. One time used for Yom Kippur. However, can it be used again? Sure, for another day. Now I know the levanim, the white garments, obviously cannot be used again, but in other words, the regular begadim that the Kohen Gadol used can be used again. So according to the approach of Rabbi Dosa, so now we're only left with one example in the Torah where nasa mitzvaso, and it's also b'ana, and that would be Truma Sedeshin. So according to Rabbi Dosa, how do I know about this whole concept of nasa mitzvaso? What's the other example in the Torah, Michael? Amemar mishum da'avi Truma Sedeshin, Egla Arufa, Shnei Suvim Baim Kechad, V'chol Shnei Suvim Baim Kechad, Eim Alamdin. There is another example, and that's the example of Egla Arufa, which is after there's a murder, right? We don't know who the murderer is, so therefore we go through the process of Egla Arufa, and the Egla Arufa, even after the decapitation of the Egla Arufa, it is Aser Behana, you cannot get benefit from it, even after Nasa Mitzvaso. Hanich Laman Damar Eim Alamdin. Good. So now we have two examples in the Torah. Well done. So since we have two examples in the Gemara, in the Torah of Nasa Mitzvaso, and it's still Aser Bahana, that proves to be the exception to the rule. The rule is, once you're Nasa Mitzvaso, so then there's no longer an Isser Hana.
Do the Rabbanon accept the Egel Rufa?
Yeah.
That you kind of get benefit from?
So in other words, why didn't the Gemara just jump right to Egla Rufa?
I mean, if they do, then it makes it three examples.
That would make it three examples.
That you cannot.
Okay, so the Gemara, right? El Amanda Amar, now.
It's called Me'ila Egla Rufa? It's not a
It's not a carbon. So the word, maybe the word Me'ila is not, but that's just the idea of Asim Mitzvaso Mutabahana. Now the Gemara says, Eimalam Dehanich Lamanda Amar, Eimalam De Elamanda Amar, Eimalam De Michael Amar. Now, the Gemara, when you see enough Gemara, you just get used to this. There's somebody out there. I don't know who that person is. I think at one point in time, Rashi does identify that person. Somebody's out there in Shas who says that even if it's two psukim, it could create a binyanav. So if that's true, so then what are you going to say over here? Hanich laman damar malam dem laman damar malam dem aikal amemar shrei miute ksiv ksiv samo uksiv ha'arufa. So we have mute, and we have followed then by another mute. Samo, you place it to the exclusion of all other avodas where once you do it, then it's mutter. And ha'arufa, the egla arufa, is subject to an isra or not even after the mitzvah is done. All other mitzvahs, once the mitzvah is done, it's mutter bahana. Okay, tashma. Okay, back to Abai and Rava. Okay, all this took us off on a tangent. Back to the machlokes between Abai and Rava. And again, two versions of how to say over the machlokes between Abai and Rava, but basically Abai is Mekel, Rava is Machmir. Let's go do another example. Hechnisa liravka vidasha kshera. Let's say I bring it into the shed. What are we talking about over here? It says Rashi, we're talking about the Egla Rufa. Now the Egla Rufa, the Torah says it cannot go through any type of work, meaning to be qualified as an Egla Rufa for the process. In the mitzvah of Egla Rufa, I have to take a young calf that never experienced a day of work in its life. Very similar to what other mitzvah in the Torah? Paraduma. Paraduma also has this qualification where it cannot go through a day's work in its life. Now, let's say I bring it into the pen and it's dash. It is involved in the act of threshing. So the Mishnah says, Hechnisa l'rafka v'dasha. Kshera, it's fine. Now, presumably, why is it fine? That wasn't my kavana. I just wanted to bring it to the pen, and it kind of happened on its own. It happened organically. That wasn't my intent. Bishvil shetinak vitidosh psula. If I wanted to thresh. So then it would be puzzled, then it would be disqualified. Okay. V'ha'acha de lo efsher, v'kamechavein, v'ktani psula. So again, the Gemara puts this under the category of lo efsher. Okay. It's impossible. And I certainly have intent, and it's going to be puzzled, and it's going to be disqualified. So this seems to take the Rav side of
Tinuk.
Right, Rashi says Tinuk. Right, if you take a look at the second to last Rashi, the Vahachalo Efshar Shaloyach Nisenesh Tinuk. Okay, it's got a. Okay, that's the. Okay, Rashi. Yeah, Rashi says it's going on the Tinuk. Anyway, either way, so the Ketani Psula, so and nevertheless it's going to be possible. So again, so what is this a case of? This is a case of low Efshar. I got to bring it inside. I got to allow it to nurse, and it's low Efshar, and I had Kavana, and it's going to be prohibited. So the Gemara says, okay, but this is not going to be a good case study. Because over here, it could be that the criteria of what disqualifies the Egla Rufa, and as we'll just talk about in just a moment, same is going to be true with the Paraduma, it could be based on a different criteria. Meaning it doesn't fall under the general category of Kavana, not Kavana, Efshar, Lo Efshar. It could be that there's a different threshold altogether when it comes to the Egla Rufa. Shani Hasam Dichsiv Asher Lo Ubad Ba. When the Torah describes that it's not allowed to go through any type of work, Asher Lo Ubad, how does the Torah describe it? Not in an active form, but rather in a passive form. Asher Lo Ubad. Meaning it cannot experience any type of labor whatsoever. Even if I didn't do it. Even if it happened organically on its own. So Mikomakom. Nami. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm ready to buy into it, but look at the Reisha. What did the Reisha say? You brought it into the pen, and it did Disha. And that wasn't my intention. So if you're right, Asher Ubad means any work that it experienced, even if you didn't intend it to happen. So shouldn't we disqualify it in the Reisha as well of the Mishnah? So halodamya alalaha. So the Gemara says, this is the answer. We're now on the top of Chavav Amnid Beis. Shekain ala of kshera. Allah alaha zachar psula. Okay, now, we are moving a discussion to Paraduma, but as Rashi points out, the Paraduma egla rufa, same discussion. Okay, same basic parameter. Right, let's take a look at the top Rashi in the Amud. Rashi says, Paraduma kai sheparach venach al gaba. Now the Torah, when describing the Paraduma, says Lo Allah Ol. Now the Torah, if you just read the Torah literally, what the Torah means is you can't have a yoke go on top of the animal. Yoke, that big thing that you put on the animal so that it can drag a plow through the field. Now, but Rashi says don't take that literally. The Mashma Allah Afilo Allah Ba'ama V'Yimishim Dechsev Ol. Rashi writes Hamar Binan Beishar Avodos. Ol just simply means that and other avodas as well. So, if a bird just lands on top of the Paraduma, that does not disqualify the Paraduma. But, if it is being mated with a male animal, and the male animal is mounting on top of it, that would be puzzle. My taima, Amarav Papa Iksiv Avad Vikarinan Avad Ada Avid Ba Ihu Iksav Uvad Vikarinan Uvad Afilomimela Nami. So the Gemara says, look, because the Torah is somewhat ambiguous in terms of how it describes the criteria. The letters spell out Avad, Ein Beis Dalet, which if we would have read it as Avad means that you have to do an act to it. Meaning you have to involve it in labor. You did it with your hands. If the Torah would have spelled it out, uvad, by putting a vav in, so that means whatever act happens to it, even if I didn't do it with my own hands, it will be disqualified. What the Torah, however, does is, it kind of gives us a blend. It spells out the word avad, but when pronounced correctly, it's ubad. Mimela nami, hashu dechsev avad vikarinan uvad, Uva dumya de avad, ma avad de nichalei, af uvad de nichalei. So it must be where the animal, and this is going to be true both by the Egla Rufa and by the Paraduma, the animal is involved in work. You don't necessarily have to do it biyadayim, but it's something that you would have done biyadayim. It's pleasant to you. It's something that satisfies you. So in other words, so now we'll go back over the examples. So if you're bringing it into the pen, and now the animal is going to get nursed, so that obviously is, even though you didn't do it, but nevertheless it's pleasing to you. And therefore that's going to be a violation of Uvad, and therefore the animal will be disqualified. If the animal gets mounted, even if you didn't necessarily do it, now why it's Nichale, I don't know. I don't really understand. But it's Nichale, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. So the Gemara says this is not going to be a question. It's just it's a different criteria for the Egla Rufa and for the Paraduma. It's the criteria of Avad, and that's why it doesn't fit into our discussion. Tashma. We're going to get to the two dots. Aveda lo yishtachena lo agabe mitav lo agabe magod letzorcha avashotcha letzorcha agabe mitav agabe magod nizam lo orchen lo yishtachena lo agabe mitav lo agabe magod ben letzorcha ben letzorcha. An item which is lost, you found and you pick it up. So, it's a big responsibility. You got to take it home and you got to take care of it. Okay? Gemara and Bar Mitzvah discusses this at length. You have to take care of it to the point where basically, until you find the owner, you have to, basically, the normal care of an item, you're now responsible for the normal care. So you have you find a big tablecloth, so you got to bring it home, you got to spread it out. Okay, basically, simple upkeep. Lo yishtachenu lo agabe mita v'lo agabe magod letzorcho. Now, if it benefits you, that's no good. Meaning, you can't use it to benefit you. It's not yours. You're just entrusted to watch it. But, aval shotcha letzorcha agabe mita v'agabe magod letzorcho. Now, if it benefits the item itself, so then obviously whatever care is necessary. Nizdamnu lo orchem. Now, if guests come over, lo yishachen lo agabe mitav lo agabe magor ben letzorcha ben letzorcha. Now, if guests come over, you cannot open it up. Rashi explains, by the way, the reason why you want to open it up is because if you leave it curled up in a ball, it's going to be more susceptible to moths and to infestation. So, therefore, you want to spread it out. You want to basically air it out. Fine, but when guests come over, you cannot air it out at all. And essentially now, as Rashi sets up the question, this is lo efshar, but this is miskaven. And the Mishnah in Bava Metzia says it's aser. Okay. And by the way, the kavana, what's the kavana? In other words, I guess basically you're showing it off to others. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara says, Shani Hasam, the case in Bava Metzia is much different. Dikali la, imisham enabisha, imisham ganave. So the Gemara says, not a good example because, look, the reason why you're not allowed to open it up has nothing to do with kavana or no kavana. That's not the issue. The issue is that once you show it off to your guests, a nabisha, the ayin hara is going to attack it, okay, however you want to understand that, and it could be that's not even a different answer, it could be the same answer, ganavim, meaning basically you're showing it off now to guests. Right? Word in the street is you have this beautiful tablecloth, you have this tapestry in your house, and now you're going to expose it more to ganavim. So this has nothing to do with efshar versus low efshar and kamechavin and enim kamechavin. It has to do with you're just simply asking for it to be stolen from your house. Tashma, we finish up with this. Mochrin kedakan avashal iskavin bechamim neichamim ukshamim neichshamim. You're selling clothing. Now you're selling clothing with shanis, and I know that's strange, but okay. You're selling clothing. And, in other words, you want to transport it from one place to another. So the Mishnah says, it's a Mishnah in Kalayim, you're allowed to wear it. Because I'm not wearing it to wear it, I'm wearing it to move it from point A to point B. That's fine. You can't have intent to get benefit from it, but if you just simply want to wear it, that would be fine. V'hatznuin mashilin achareim b'makal. Now, tznuin, in this context, doesn't mean modest people. It means the frummers. What would they do? They wouldn't wear the shatnez clothing when transporting it from point A to point B. So much like you would see in downtown Manhattan, they would put it on a rack, and they would walk with the rack. So therefore, they wouldn't have to wear it. Okay. That's the Mishnah in Kalayim. Now, I know, again, we can just keep going back to the issue of, what do you mean? Davashenim is common. It's Psik Reisha. Okay. Anyway, and I don't want to just dismiss it. It's an important point, but not for now. In the meantime, however, this is what? Efshar or low efshar? This is a case of efshar. In fact, the Mishnah just told us there's another way of transporting it. You could do like the tznuin. and you can transport it like the tznuin. The ha'echa de efshel la ma'avik tznuin. V'chilo la mechavein sharei. And as long as you didn't have kavana, I mean, that's essentially what the Mishnah says. That as long as you don't have intent, so then it's going to be fine. So this is a case of efshar. This is a case of einam eskavein. And to yum laman demasni lishna kama derava tiyufta. And the Gemara says, and what's the conclusion over here? This is not going to fit into lishna kama, because we had a lishna kama that in a case where it is efshar, there's another way to do it. As long as there's no kavana, it's clearly mutter. If you go back to the beginning of our whole discussion today, if you go back to the beginning of the daf today, in a case of, again, lishna kama, in a case of einam eskavein, and it's efshar to do it another way, so Rava says, Rabbi Shimon wouldn't say it's mutter. In that case, Rabbi Shimon would say it's aser. From this Mishnah and Kalayim, what becomes clear is, it's mutter. It is permissible, even though it's efshar. Even though there's another way to go about it. Okay? So basically, conclusion. Right? The Gemara actually arrives at a conclusion today. So there are basically now, the discussion begins with Abai and Rava. Machlos chun Abai and Rava, Abai's Mekel, Rava's Machmir. There are two versions of the discussion. The Gemara says that Aliba, the first version of the discussion, the Lishna Kama, comes out that we're siding in favor of Abaye, not like Rava. That in a case of Eino Miskavin, if it's a Davish Eino Miskavin, even if I didn't have to do it this way, even if there was another way for me to do whatever I wanted to do, if there's no intent involved, the halach is that it's mutter. Okay, and as I pointed out, and it became clear over the course of today, I mean, think about what we discussed today. Egla Rufa, Parah Aduma, the Issur of Kalayim, in other words, it's clear that the Davar She'eino Miskavein discussion is not limited to just Shabbos. It applies to Kol HaTorah Kula. And under these circumstances, if it's an Eino Miskavein, Davar She'eino Miskavein, A, the Gemara says we go like Rabbi Shimon, and B, not only do we go like Rabbi Shimon, but even in the case of Efshar, we're still going to go like Rabbi Shimon. However, in the second Lishna, in the Lishna Basra of the Gemara, there, they were not arguing within Rabbi Shimon, they were arguing within Rabbi Yehuda. And the question is Rabbi Yehuda going to be Mekel in a case where it's low Efshar? So that's Machlokes between Abai and Rava. And there, we could say like the halacha is like Rava, where in the case of low Efshar, in the case of Miskavein, and it's low Efshar, we're still going to be Machmer, and Rabbi Yehuda is still going to say that it is prohibited. Okay. That was yesterday's daf. Okay, tomorrow, another huge topic coming up tomorrow. Tomorrow is Zevzeh Gorein. Okay, a lot of big stuff in this in the second paragraph.